Off the Ball Daily,
a home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
Yeah, it's cricket mad. You know, you've got 30 million people who just live for cricket. And then ever since then, I've really had a pretty big interest in Nepalese cricket.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
Off the Ball's Football Daily.
Hello and welcome along to Thursday's Football Daily. I'm Phil Egan. Coming up today, Arnold Slot's questioned by Jamie Carragher about his style of play despite a 3-0 win away to Marseille. Newcastle go one step closer to qualifying for the next round in Europe. Evan Ferguson's back for Roma and Bohemians make another signing ahead of the new season. But first, Liverpool have put themselves in a strong position to finish in the Champions League top eight after a 3-0 win away to Marseille. A Dominic Szoboszlai free kick in the first half, then an own goal from Geronimo Rulli and a Cody Gakpo strike proved to be the difference on the night. Boss Arne Slot says they had luck on their side for a change.
The moment we were having a big chance to score the 2-0 that hit the post or the bar. 10 seconds later they had a big chance, and usually this season that ball goes in and we're all complaining. But now the ball went over and we extended our lead to 2 and 3-0, and the performance is still the same.
The win moved Liverpool up to fourth, and a win in next week's final game at home to Karabag would ensure they avoid the playoffs, and Slot says his players could do with the time off.
We're already 7-8 months into the season, and I don't think Virgil has had more than 3 days off. And it's the same for Ryan, and it's the same for all these players. But they constantly show up, they constantly show mentality, no matter how many setbacks we've had this season.
Slot was on the CBS Sports Champions League show after the game. Former Liverpool defender Jamie Carragher was part of their coverage as always, and he questioned some of the style of play from Slot's team this season.
I think we played a very good game. I don't know if Jamie saw it because I heard he was constantly on the phone with his mom, but I can tell him we played quite a good game today.
Anna, can I ask you about the setup of the team tonight? Because over the last sort of few months, you're trying to obviously make the team, you know, get better results, and you've played lots of different sort of formations at different times. Can you just explain how it looked tonight? It looked like sort of you had two wide strikers and a box midfield.
Yeah, I find it hard to listen to you, Jamie, because you were the one that told me that I had to make sure we didn't concede that much. So I started to do that, and as a result of that, people were complaining that it became boring. So not sure if I should listen to you. But because of some injuries we have, because of the players we have available and the style of play Marseille has, we thought it was a good idea to play with Mo and Hugo up front and to overload the midfield with players that are very good in between the lines. And I think you could see that today with fullbacks that could attack down the side, and Maka and Ryan who could help out Joe and Virgil in build-up. So that worked.
Arne,
in my opinion, quite well today.
Yeah, Arne, you mentioned there about, obviously, at the moment, the criticism about the team is that it's a little bit slow, it's a little bit boring. At the start of the season, it was completely different. How difficult is that as a manager to sort of get that balance right? And also, if that is the criticism right now about the team being a little bit slow, a bit pragmatic, how do you improve that? How can you work on that?
I watched Real Madrid, Barcelona, for Dutch television, and after 32 minutes when it was still 0-0, the commentator said that Barcelona played really slow and boring, and that was because Madrid was constantly in a low block, and it was really hard for Barcelona to play through. 10 minutes later it was 2-2 because of individual quality of Rafinha, Vinicius Jr. and a set piece, and then they went to the studio and the pundit said it's one of the best games we've ever seen. So goals in football are so important, what people's opinions are, and I think we've shown this season that every time when it's a bit of a more open game, and that has mainly been in Europe and a few times in the Premier League as well, we are a very good team. We can make it very good difficult for everyone, but when we raise low blocks, we struggle a little bit more to create chances. For me, for obvious reasons, everyone in the club also is aligned on that. I think Pep said something about it yesterday, what you need against low blocks. But today we didn't face a low block and we played a very good game, but we don't play slow. If you face a low block, it's very hard to get pace into the game. And I think we've tried against Burnley. We've found a few adjustments which helped, because against Burnley we've created probably two or three times the amount of chances as today. But now we score three, and now people like Jamie are very positive about us. I don't think you were very positive about us after the Burnley game, were you, Jamie?
I was actually. I said that's just one of those games that sometimes you have to accept. But I think, but what I would say, Arne, I think some of the games that we've watched against, say, Sunderland and Leeds, I would say at home, was not like the Burnley. The Burnley game was one of those games that I think it was unlucky. Whereas the Sunderland game and Leeds game, you are there as a supporter or a pundit or as a Liverpool fan as I am, actually think we need more than that. The game needs to be a bit quicker. The intensity needs to be there. That was lacking, I felt, in those games. But that, I don't think, was the case against Burnley.
I agree. I think against Burnley was much more intense than in the other two games. But we've played Burnley twice, so I can say this. I rate Leeds United and Sunderland a bit higher than Burnley. So it's also harder against teams that are very well organized, and if the players are even better than the ones of Burnley, it makes it really hard to create a lot of chances, unless you have certain quality where I've spoken a lot about and Pep has spoken about yesterday evening. And that can change the game. And I just said, gave the example of Barcelona-Madrid, where Vinicius scored an incredible 1v1. I think he made a run of 30, 40 yards. And the same for Rafinha. And there was a set piece, which is also very important to unlock a low block. So I completely disagree with people who say that we are playing slow. Because we have the ball, we control possession, and we want to go as quickly as we can. But if there are 10 players inside the 18-yard box, it's quite hard to get tempo and rhythm, and it's hard to score goals, and especially for us.
Newcastle boss Eddie Howe is relishing next week's trip to Holders PSG as his side attempt to qualify automatically for the last 16.
I think they're a real inspiration to us with their style. So I think this is the hardest, if not one, it's difficult to put sort of a label on it, but one of the hardest games we can play, which will be great for our development. But we want to try and go there and win, of course.
Newcastle have secured at least a playoff spot after their 3-0 win at home to PSV Eindhoven. They return to action at St James's Park at the weekend when they face Aston Villa on Sunday. Chelsea are also into the automatic qualification places after their narrow 1-0 win at home to Pavos. Boss Liam Rossignol says his players show great fighting spirit.
You have to keep knocking on the door, but you also have to keep the back door shut. There are things I was pleased with, there are things that we need to improve on, but overall the body language of the group, they kept going. They were making block after block and save after save.
On last night's football show, Owen Doyle joined Owen Sheehan and said Rossignol might need to be a little more mindful of how he comes across in the press.
Liam Rossignol and his start to life at Chelsea. LinkedInification of football is what I saw as a headline on Football 365 earlier, as he gets lumped in with Southgate and Frank. Are you a LinkedIn man yourself?
I'm not, no. You?
No, not on LinkedIn. But I'm not against these LinkedIn individuals.
I think he needs these press conferences, like, he needs to tone them down a lot. Just say what you have to say and get out of there, because look, I said to you off air, look, he's going to become a meme, and you said no, he's already a meme, and he needs to shake that. Now, you'll shake that for a while if you win a few games in a row, and that's fine. And like, to be fair, like, you know, like, he's obviously came in and the Charlton in the FA Cup, he beat Brentford the other day, and then against Arsenal came back twice, and they're not out of it. And like, we hope he just gets judged on that, but we all know that football isn't like that. I just think he needs to be very, very careful in how he's carrying himself when it comes to these press conferences, because it's an easy out for a football club or a fan base to turn on him.
Can you unmeme yourself?
Unai Emery did it, and you look at him now, and he's a serious operator, serious man.
Like, nobody takes the piss out of him football for how man. He says good evening anymore.
No.
Elsewhere in the Champions League last night, Bayern Munich striker Harry Kane scored twice in their 2-0 win at home to Union Saint-Gilloise. He missed a penalty for his hat-trick, but Bayern are into the last 16 with Arsenal with the game to spare. Barcelona are outside the top 8 on goal difference despite their 4-2 win away to Slavia Prague. Pedri came off with a hamstring injury for Barca and is now expected to be out for several weeks. Kefren Thuram and Weston McKennie scored second half goals to give Juventus a 2-0 win at home to Jose Mourinho's Benfica. The Portuguese side will have to beat Real Madrid at home to have any chance of making the playoff round. Finish 1-1 between Galatasaray and Atletico Madrid in Istanbul. That result leaves Atletico 8th in the standings with 13 points, keeping them in contention for a top 8 finish and direct qualification. Galatasaray are 16th on 10 points. They finish with an away game against Manchester City next Wednesday. Athletic Bilbao won 3-2 in Bergamo against Atalanta, which bumped them up into the top 24. Atalanta dropped to 13th. And Karabag scored in injury time to win 3-2 at home to Eintracht Frankfurt. Karabag remain in the mix for a playoff place ahead of their trip to Anfield next week. Celtic aim to take a step closer to reaching the knockout stages of the Europa League tonight. Martin O'Neill's side are away to Italian outfit Bologna. Celtic are in 24th place with two games to play, so they're barely hanging on for that place in the playoffs.
I think that we're well aware that we've got a big fight in our hands from a side that wants to try and make it to the top eight. It is away from home. It's a difficult task for us, but all we can do is really put absolutely heart and soul into it, and that's what we intend to do.
Aston Villa can see their place in the top eight, but they will have to do without a number of key players, including captain John McGinn, for tonight's game away to Fenerbahce. The Scotland international didn't travel to Turkey after he suffered a knee injury in Sunday's loss to Everton. Manager Unai Emery says they're still waiting to find out just how long McGinn will be unavailable for.
He's still visiting some doctor to have a decision what to do, but could be for some weeks or could be, it depends, the doctor and him, how he's feeling, to be less.
Those games I mentioned there kick off at 6:15. At 8, Evan Ferguson is set to be involved for Roma once again after overcoming his back injury. Gianpiero Gasperini's side take on Stuttgart. Nottingham Forest are in Portugal to take on Braga. Rangers, who were already out, play at home to Ludogorets. And Robbie Keane's Ferencváros side are at home to Panathinaikos. Alan Brown scored and set up Tommy Conway's winner for Middlesbrough, who moved into the Championship's automatic promotion places with a 2-1 win away to 10-man Stoke. It was the second goal in four games for the Ireland international, who's currently on loan from Sunderland. Boston Lowell was shown a second yellow with 15 minutes to go to make it a miserable night for Stoke. Finn Azzaz and Ryan Manning both featured for Southampton, who warmed up for this weekend's South Coast Derby against Portsmouth with a 1-0 win over Sheffield United. Tom Cannon, who has a couple of caps for the boys in green, started up front for the Blades. Former St Pat's defender James Abankwa was at the heart of the Watford defence in their 1-1 draw at home to Portsmouth. Abankwa came off with 10 minutes to go at Vicarage Road. Ireland under-21 international Rocco Vatta came on shortly after the hour mark. Chelsea are just one game away from successfully defending the Women's League Cup after they beat Manchester City 1-0 in the semi-finals last night. Chelsea will play Manchester United, who also beat Arsenal 1-0 in the other semi-final. Sadio Diallo has become Bohemian's sixth signing ahead of the new League of Ireland season. The midfielder arrives from Derry City after 3.5 years at the Brandywell, where he made 108 first-team appearances. He scored 8 goals. And finally today, Nicholas McGeehan of Fair Square joined Owen Sheehan and Owen Doyle on last night's Off the Ball. With the World Cup in the US, Mexico and Canada just under 6 months away, McGeehan questioned the relationship between Gianni Infantino and Donald Trump.
What's really interesting here is the way in which FIFA has kind of backed itself into a corner. And I know that Fair Square has done some work on this. So back in December, you filed an ethics complaint over Infantino and his repeated breaches of the political neutrality rules. Can you just explain to us how FIFA have actually broken their own code of ethics in terms of neutrality?
Yeah, it's a pretty obvious breach, to be honest. You know, FIFA talks a lot about keeping sport and politics separate. It's outlawed in the statutes, and there's a provision in the code of ethics, I think it's Article 15, which basically says you're not allowed to take any political stance. No senior official can do that. And now Infantino did it at least 4 times last year. He expressed public support for Trump winning the Nobel Peace Prize. He said in Miami in November that Trump was doing a good job and we should all get behind him. You know, the Peace Prize itself, he clearly expressed support for Trump. So it's not just a breach, it's repeated egregious breaches of this provision. And according to the rules, he should be banned from football-related activity for 2 years. It's not going to happen, obviously, because of the amount of power that he has. But I don't think there's any question that he has, you know, hitched FIFA's, you know, wagon to the MAGA project in a way that is, you know, deeply problematic and not all that smart, as is being revealed now.
Is the FIFA Ethics Committee the committee that gave Trump the Peace Prize?
No. So right, That's another really interesting component of it. The Ethics Committee is like it's one of its judicial mechanisms, right? It upholds breaches of things that happen off the pitch. It doesn't seem that there was a committee that was brought in to adjudicate on the Peace Prize. It seems to have been done by Trump, by Infantino himself. That's another component, actually, of the complaint. He's not allowed to do that. He's not allowed to take unilateral decisions on the strategic direction of FIFA. That's supposed to be done by the FIFA Council, this new body that was brought in after the scandal that brought down Blatter. But the problem with FIFA is that, you know, since those reforms came in, they've actually been done in such a way that has allowed Infantino to centralise power. So he's acting increasingly like the sort of dictators who he seems to admire. And sort of, you know, going out on his loan, on his own, and that's what the Peace Prize was, it seems.
And are there any mechanisms in place that make him susceptible to the idea that he's gone out on a limb to do this? Like, is there anybody that he has to answer to for essentially going against the Ethics Committee in terms of neutrality, which is essentially what he did by awarding the Peace Prize?
No, I mean, again, that's one of the main problems. I mean, you have these committees, you have the Ethics Committee, it's supposed to be there and it's supposed to uphold the laws and the rules of FIFA, but it doesn't. You know, there's repeated instances that where anyone of any seniority is challenged within that body, they let it go. So FIFA is entirely unaccountable to anybody, really, and Infantino has, say, dictatorial powers. But what he says goes there because he has such incredible levels of power. And the people who are supposed to hold him accountable, the FIFA Council, are all on massive salaries, all for turning up to meetings 3 or 4 times a year and rubber stamping the decisions of the president. So as an organisation, it's it's deeply structurally flawed. And the misgovernance that we see both off the pitch and on the pitch is a direct consequence of that, unfortunately.
You can listen to that chat back in full if you want now in your OTB Football podcast feed. That's about all we have time for in today's Football Daily. I'm Phil Egan and I'll be back with more tomorrow.
To unlock much more from the OTB Football feed, sign up at offtheball.com/join now.